happy day.
Oh, happy day.
When Jesus
wore. When Jesus wore.
Oh, when he wore.
Jesus wore.
When Jesus wore.
When Jesus wore.
He washed my sins away.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting from our studios in New York City. Today, we're going to talk about how our gut bacteria imbalance causes diabetes risk. Now, think of all the people who are pre-diabetic and diabetic. You're dealing with about 100 million people, so this could help save some suffering. Also, from York University in Toronto, how fat cells may play a key role in the battle against breast cancer, and I'll explain what that means. And then we're going to look at how cash-strapped towns are unpaving roads that they can't afford to fix. Well, that's a radical concept, but it's a very smart one. After all, would you rather have a road that has multiple potholes that you could injure yourself or hurt your car, or would you rather have that asphalt cleaned up, taken out, and some type of hard truth put in its place? But they're doing it. Today, I haven't had time because yesterday I did about a 47-minute commentary. I didn't anticipate it to go that long, but it was, for those of you who listen to the Progressive Radio Network, you heard it live. For some of our other stations, you had a different program that was done when our sister station was off the air for 2.5 hours. So you can listen to it on the archives. But it was a very important statement for those who believe that now that Bernie Sanders is out, that you automatically must support, to be a good corporate Democrat or a good liberal, Hillary Clinton. I gave a commentary on the argument that better the devil we know than the devil we do not know, and why it's such a fallacious argument. So that I did for 47 minutes. So I did not have a chance to read the letter and get to the single issue that we can begin a campaign, universal campaign, by people of all generations, but this is specifically for the millennial generation, to take back our lives, to show how you can use power in a positive way for social change. So I'm going to get to that today. And also, another fellow in the audience who's a young person wrote a description of what it's like to be a young person, a mantra for the new American century. So I'll read it. I thought it was very clever and very accurate. Also today, we should have a lot better curriculum than what we have, and we should have a lot smarter students than what we have. And there's no one single reason why that doesn't happen, why a kid growing up in China, in Japan, in Russia, in Cuba is going to be a lot better educated, especially in the sciences and about the world in history. But I want to give you an example, two examples today of what it means when it comes to understanding the importance of a curriculum. Every one of the people you're hearing from were representing their states in the Miss America pageant. So we have Miss Alabama, Miss Alaska, they're all in there. That's whose voices you will hear. And then we're going to hear from, you might consider a rather normal 16 or 17-year-old young woman and how they talk and chat on the internet and their philosophy and what they say. I think you'll find it interesting. So that's our program today, plus a longer video we're going to spend most of our program reviewing. But first, always starting with health and nutrition. And you can also listen to this program over the telephone, and I'll give you that number in just a moment, so you can write it down so you have that number. And that way, if you ever turn on your station and it's not there, my program, is, which was the case in New York the other day, you can dial this number 5 days a week and listen live. Put it on the speaker. Here it is. Write it down, please. Because for those of you who had not written it down, and then suddenly my office was flooded with calls. We had over 70,000 minutes just the other day of people who couldn't hear me on one station, so they immediately went to their phones. Call 712-775-6850, 712-775-6850, and that way you can listen anytime, no matter what's happening with your local station, or if you're out and you're about and you're not near a land-based station or internet. We know that we should be having good bacteria in our diet. That's a given. And you get good bacteria when you get good sources of the bacteria. And right now there is a booming market in probiotic foods, what are called functional foods. It's functional because it functions in the body a specific way. I'll make it real simple, like kimchi or sauerkraut or yogurt. Those all have bacteria. Now, you want a large amount of bacteria. I would say from a 1 billion to 50 billion, depending upon your condition. And you have to keep recolonizing this daily. You can't just have it once in a while. And this is the latest from the University of Copenhagen. It says gut bacteria imbalance increases diabetes risk, which means that if you do not have good bacteria, you increase your risk of diabetes. But what gives you bad bacteria that does increase your risk? Well, the bad bacteria would come from sugar, soft drinks, any form of carbohydrate that is breaking down in your gut. Remember, all your carbohydrates, whether they're complex like beans, nuts and seeds, and legumes, and vegetables, ultimately the body is trying to break it down to get all the available amino acids. That's your building blocks of protein. And for those of us who are vegan, we have no problem getting all of our amino acids, all of our protein, without ever eating any animal. We don't need eggs. We don't need dairy. We don't need fish. Don't need any of that. In fact, not only are we getting our amino acids, but we're getting quality fibers that help keep the intestine clean and allow for a healthier bacteria to grow there. We're also getting more, let's say, polyphenols, antioxidants, and those antioxidants protect our cell. So the more antioxidants you get throughout the day, that's why if you graze throughout the day, have an apple, have an avocado, have some hummus, have a bean soup, you don't have to sit for one big meal as we do now, because there's too much food going in all at once and you can't really digest it all. A lot of it gets dumped, partially digested, and then you don't benefit from it. So the issue is, the less amount of food that you eat at any given meal, the greater the digestion and the bioavailability and the absorption. So you get more nutrients actually absorbed into your tissue when you are eating smaller quantities of food, smaller meals. And I call it grazing. So having a big smoothie in the morning, putting some berries in, and pomegranates are great also. If you can't get the pomegranates fresh, then use pomegranate concentrate. That's really good for your brain. It's good for your heart. It's good for your blood. And you also want some beets in there. That helps reduce your risk of a stroke or cancer, and also reduces your risk of a heart attack. And it's terrific for you. It allows your muscles to be more energized. Nitric oxide is produced. That's why. You want to make sure that you have some greens. Greens that help flush excess fluid out of the body, like helping your lymphatic drainage. That's where you get dandelion root with celery, cucumber, lemon, and ginger. That's a great lymphatic flush. And your lymph glands are there so that they can absorb toxins and dead debris and then flush them out of the body. So that's a juice that helps. So the more of these healthy foods you're eating, the better the bacteria, the better the nutrients, the more nutrients that actually lessen the damage and repair damage. So that's what they're saying here. They're saying that, quote, we showed that specific imbalances in the gut microbiota, that's your bacteria, are essential contributors to insulin resistance, a forerunner state of widespread disorders like type 2 diabetes, hypertension, and atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease, which are in epidemic growth. Wow. And that was done at the University of Copenhagen. So, if we want to live a longer life, get your good bacteria in on a daily basis. Now, this is from York University in Toronto. And this professor, Michael Connor, highlights how fat cells could help determine the most effective way to fight breast cancer, including using exercise to combat the disease. And historically, people thought, oh, adipose tissue, that's your body fat, it's just a storage form of energy. However, fat cells are now understood to be active cells that produce more than 400 adipokines. These are hormones, which eventually end up in the blood and make their way around the body. And what Professor Connor found in his research team was that these hormones in from fat can really have an association between obesity and breast cancer. Now, in lay language, it says this, that the more overweight you are, the more body mass index, that means fat, the more likely you are to develop cancer. By the way, it's also true of colorectal cancer and men prostate cancer. For women, it's breast cancer. So the idea that as a society we should start accepting being overweight as a normal condition, and so a person doesn't feel bad, and of course people should not feel bad and should not be subjugated to any taunts or harassment or ridicule because they're overweight, but we should not at the same time accept that being overweight is normal. It is not. I once said on the air, and I'm not only saying it again, I'm saying it with a very clear knowledge of what the scientific literature shows. When you are overweight, you cannot be healthy. It is not humanly possible. Yes, you can check your basic signs like your pulse rate or your blood pressure, your blood sugar, but that doesn't mean you're healthy. You're prematurely aging. You speed up telomere shortening, and the telomeres are your caps on your chromosomes, and they shorten because of bad diet, alcohol, lack of exercise and stress, depression and anxiety all shorten your telomeres. So everything like that shortens your lifespan. Therefore, de-stressing through meditation and prayer and reading and relaxing music, a quiet place, a companion pet, a loving friend, a great relationship, all of those contribute to a longer life. But a bad relationship, a drama relationship, and drama relationships are one of the most single toxic exposures and experiences you can have in your life. They kill you. So ask yourself, is any relationship worth dying for? When the outcome is you're not going to be fulfilled or happy, you're not manifesting a higher vibrational level, you're simply being as tolerant as you can be and staying in a negative place, you pay a price. And the price is cortisol, epinephrine, norepinephrine, adrenaline, exhaustion of your adrenal glands, and depletion of your mitochondria, and increased risk of cancer, stroke, heart attacks. So just remember, when you're cleaning up your diet, clean up your relationship at the same time. So that's what this means. So all this put together means if you have healthy fats and you exercise and you get rid of all that extra body fat, you're going to have less likelihood of having cancer and living a longer life. The heavier you are, the longer you are overweight, the shorter your life. It's that simple. No other way to put it. Also, another study from University of Virginia shows that, and I'll quote this, shocking new role found for the immune system controlling social interactions. Researchers determined that the immune system affects and even controls social behavior. Blocking a single type of immune molecule made the brains in this experiment go hyperactive and cause abnormal behavior, restoring it fixed both. Discovery could have enormous implications for neurologists and neurological conditions working with autism and schizophrenia, etc. Quote, it's crazy, but maybe we're just multicellular battlefields for two ancient forces, pathogens and the immune system. Part of our personality may actually be dictated by the immune system. And then it talks about understanding the implications of this and how this really impacts people. All right. Here's what I have found. Working with a group of ex-prisoners, I used to go into the Queen's House of Detention, counsel people before they got back out of prison, so to see if they understood the responsibility they have coming back out, the challenge they were going to be faced with, and how they can better cope with those. And also over in New Jersey, and I work with AIDS patients over in New Jersey, remarkable improvements in those that were given a special diet. And I got to hand it, the prison system at that point back then actually allowed Dr. Philip Hodes and I to go in there and get them special made juices and get them supplementation, very high doses, and especially a vitamin D3 that a normal person would never consume. Remarkable improvement in their AIDS status. I never talk about that, and I should really write that up. It was just one of many studies I was doing on helping people with full-blown AIDS improve and recover. I actually personally work with over 1,200 AIDS sufferers and help them on their road to recovery. In any case, the idea is that one of the very first things that we had them do is give up all sugar, all dairy, all gluten, no refined carbohydrates, and really stick with a healthy, or at least these were incarcerated people, as healthy as they could. And the feedback was, man, it's like, I don't know what this is about, Gary, but I don't feel as anxious, as aggressive. I don't feel like I want to hurt anybody. Now, that had come after Dr. Alexander Schaust and Dr. Schoenberg did some outstanding work showing that when you got rid of sugar and dairy in a prison system, and they published their results, you reduced acts of violence. Well, what are we talking about there? We're talking about the immune system. And also, we found that when I would do a long retreat with very advanced individuals, let's say for a month, about the second week in personal counseling, you get the feedback that anger and rage were subsiding substantially. People who had been impatient, intolerant of anything, were now much more mellow. And at the time, I thought, this has to do with their biochemistry shifting, including how it impacts the brain. I even did a book on this. I did a PBS special on this called The Food-Mood Connection, showing you that what you eat directly impacts your brain. And then I followed that up with a study group with ADD and ADHD children and was able to have about a 90% improvement, 90%, 90. And the only study I'm aware of ever done where you changed everything in the diet, plus you rebuilt their intestine, you rebuilt their bacteria, you rebuilt their nutrients going into the brain, and it made remarkable improvements. The next one I'm going to do in the fall will also include people who are vaccine damaged, because the same protocol will work. But what we were really doing, and now the study confirms it, we were changing the immune system in our health support group. We're seeing magnificent, absolutely remarkable improvements. In fact, two people came up to me this past Saturday and said, I've had arthritis for more than a dozen years. I'm in chronic pain. I was on multiple painkillers. In 3 weeks, I've been able to wean myself off all the painkillers. I have no pain now at all. And the person raised and lowered their leg several times. I couldn't do this at all just 4 weeks ago. So we're seeing this. Another person said that they didn't have their depressive symptoms. Another, their anxiety symptoms. So I ask, show of hands, how many of you no longer feel depressed and anxious? And by the way, this is not occasional. These were people got in the study who are chronically depressed, chronically anxious. And probably half those in the room, hands went up, who are in that category. So what's happening? Their immune system. You get rid of all the stuff that inflames in the body. You feed the body everything that heals at the cellular level, rejuvenates the cellular level, rejuvenate the mitochondria, the energy factories, stimulate natural T-cell activity, stimulate new bone marrow growth, which not only reverses osteoporosis, but also can create new synovial fluid so that people have better moving joints. They have more natural lubrication. They have turned off the pain. So now that study makes all the sense in the world. Turn on the immune system by bad foods, alcohol, bad environment, and you also contribute to depression and disease. And it impacts your social behavior. So if we wonder why some people just have a really bad attitude, negative, argumentative, all the time, I don't care what you would do for a person, they're going to find a way to be angry about it. And you all know people like that. A, get away from those people because you're not going to help them. And B, at least understand now that one way we can help people help themselves is give up everything that's bad, go to everything that's good, and watch their immune system change. And as their immune system changes, it changes their brain behavior. That's the takeaway note. Bad immune, bad behavior. Good immune, good behavior. Not in everyone, but at least now it's showing us how powerful the immune system is in ways that we just had never known before. I'm Gary Noll. That's the latest on health and nutrition. Now I want to share this with you, which I found of interest. All of us have been on roads, main roads, side streets, highways, country roads that are potholed. And the typical way is they go out and patch it. Well, that's a whole cottage industry because those patches never hold for long. And then it has to be redone. Quote, cash-strapped towns are unpaving roads they can't afford to fix. And this is from Wired. Quote, and it goes on to talk about how when they decided to rip up a pothole-riddled asphalt road and replace it with gravel back in 2009, it didn't seem as if it would be a forerunner of a growing trend in public works. It was simply responding to a citizen's complaint. City Hall received complaints about this one road called Bliss Road in Vermont, and so they didn't have the money to replace the road or to repair it, so they just ripped it up and took it down to its foundation and then just put some gravel on it, and now it's fine. And that is what's happening across America now. So just think of this. The whole big expansion in the 1940s and 50s and 60s of our highway and infrastructure, and how now all of our infrastructure is crumbling, our bridges, tunnels, dikes, dams, and our roads, our subways. We're not putting the money where we should to bring these back to their health. Instead, we're misapplying that money elsewhere. But when, at least with roads, they're seeing a different approach. They're putting down gravel and hard true, which at least gets rid of the potholes and makes it easier to continue repairing it and maintaining it. Now, I'm going to, before we take a break, I'm going to read a letter from Desiree in this audience. Dear Gary, my name is Desiree, a millennial, I guess I'd fall under. I'd rather more be referred to as a concerned human being who wants to help make a significant, drastic, quick change for the sake of our world and essentially all human brothers and sisters. Firstly, I'd like to explain my life journey so far. I'm 29 years old. I have an associate's in illustration and graphic design from Pratt Institute. Good for you. I used to teach at Pratt. And one of my good friends is John LaBelle. And John's, I think, is the longest architectural professor at Pratt, over 45 years. It's a great institute. over in Brooklyn. I also attended SVA for 3 years, and I'm in a student, and I am in student debt. I've worked retail most of my life and would be considered low to low middle income. I've had a progressive change in the past few years. I try to be a conscious eater, all depending upon how much I can afford. I live check by check in New York with my sort of husband. All of my family have moved out of state due to a lack of funds and no job opportunities. I've been listening. I've been a listener of WBI for a few years, and as of 3 weeks, a PRN listener as well. The more I listen to these socially conscious shows, the more I feel there is something very wrong with the mentality of the people of our country. Many may need to overcome their white rage. Others need to be acknowledged as the true natives of this land and stop the suicides. Many more need to be taken out of the ghettos, given a chance to live in homes and safe neighborhoods, to be taught the real education of the Americas, civil rights, Black Wall Street, Black Panthers, and so much more. Our Hispanic and Latino brethren need to overcome the beautiful differences that define our culture and need to see the truth. We are a mix of European heritage that raped and slashed across the way through Africa, the Caribbean, to South America to give the skin tones and hurt souls we see today. Be more united, except we were conquered and brainwashed to believe lighter meant more entitlement. Race and color were cleverly created to keep us apart and list the ways we can despise one another. Then look at what we want to stand for and band together for the good of all of us. That is, the end takes care of us. This is a very broad email, and I know I left out many more who are in need of understanding and help. To get to the point of what the young people of today need to do to help change the world is to be mindful of everything that's going on. We can't change one thing and expect all racial, GMO, spiritual, mental, emotional, and environmental political problems to fall in line. How can someone, with their daily responsibilities, their family, their job, or jobs, cause a revolution of the mind? How can we produce change when so many of us work late, fuel our bodies with unnutritional food that we can only afford? How can a mass movement of our continental mixing pot stir this America to see itself in the many colors and faces of this diverse people? Okay, legitimate question, and well said, Desiree, and I'm going to address that. I'm also going to address a letter from another millennial who wrote me, and this is from John. And John wrote a little screed here. It says, a mantra for the new American century. This is his generation, and he is merely one person speaking on behalf of himself, and whether or not others think it applies to more people in his generation is based upon your own experience and interpretation. Quote, we're all awesome. We're all digitally connected. We're all on Facebook, and we have 1,600 friends that we never physically have seen nor touched. We're all likened and hooked up six ways to Tuesday. We're all Skype, text, and tweet from across the room, but hate each other in person. We all network and share our personal information, NP. We all upload, download, and post, have no concept of privacy or real intimacy. We all live vicariously on YouTube. We all have dreams of going viral, but can't interpret or understand the meaning of our nocturnal dreams. We're all entrepreneurial, big time. We're all aspiring technology moguls, businessmen and businesswomen. We're all crazily competitive and have mad skills. We have all website blogs, Twitter accounts, RSS feeds, and we're all working on a startup. We all have awesome business models, killer marketing strategies, and off-the-map product lines. We're all ready to blow up, launch, go live, go wide, roll it out, and take it on up to the next level. We're all up to our eyeballs in credit card debt and student loans. We all have bad teeth. We can't afford health insurance and can barely make rent. But we're all awesome. We all have awesome tattoos, nose rings, tongue posts, nipple rings and face piercings. We all feel emotionally mutilated and have been drugged, vaccinated, beaten, and sexually abused before our teens. We all had smartphones, iPads, iPods, Bluetooth, and we're all sold out on wireless technology. We all swear by iTunes, wear earplugs 24/7, kick up on the techno and metal and pack more apps than Jesus. We all can't locate a pulse or have the time or inclination to listen to and appreciate the sound of our own heartbeat. We're all stoked, pumped, ripped, and amped on Starbucks, Red Bull, Monster, and 5-Hour Energy. We're all sleep-deprived, have little sense of nutrition, and live mostly on fast foods, Twixlers, and Snickers. We all smoke, drink, sniff, snort, shoot, and we're all wired on opiates and amphetamines 16 hours a day. We all hate the government and don't believe or trust anyone. We all hate politics, politicians, teachers, police, and bankers. We all can't locate Ghana or the South Sudan on a map. We all don't have rat's ass about the plight of the Palestinians, nor care, nor drone attacks in Afghanistan, nor Pakistan or Yemen, nor care. We all think cheating is respectable and something to be admired. We're all freaking awesome. We're all confused and don't have a clue how the world got to where it is today. We all think unemployed workers are lazy victims of their own choosing. We're all terrified about being outsourced or being replaced by a button. We all have zero savings and can't see a future past the following Thursday. We're all millennials and dread the idea of moving back home with our parents, but that's where we're going. We all have no idea who we are and really don't know each other beyond our Twitter or handles. We all live in fear of being raped, murdered, and imprisoned, and live distant, separate, and disconnected lives. We all have two things in common. We're all awesome, that we're sure of, and we're all one paycheck away from being homeless. We're all understood that this is our inheritance and that we're not in the cause, but we are the effect. Okay. John, that you may or may not be correct on any or all that. And here is two examples. Now, you're a millennial. The two people, Desiree and John, you're both millennials, 29, 30 years of age. Here are some people your age. All of these are former Miss of a state, and they were all part of the finalists in the Miss America contest. And they're asked a simple question about how important is math? Should we teach math in school?
Math? No. I do not believe in math, and I don't think we should encourage it.
Oh, okay, this is a really hard one. There are really two sides to this story. On the one hand, you have math, and then on the other hand, you have... this is like non-math.
All seven-year-olds should have the right to decide for themselves if math is scientific fact. Math is a theory, and it's not at all what the Bible tells us. We live in America, not Russia.
Just a little bit. Adding, not, times.
I think that people should try to be as knowledged as they can. I think they need to get learned so that, you know, they can make a choice about all of the world things.
Children have the right to learn anything they want to learn. Alchemy, Scientology, gymnastics.
You really don't know what the square root of 16 is. No one does.
Aliens. You know, how to just make basic mixed drinks.
Yes, it's math. I'm sorry, is this a joke?
Creationism, whatever those Heaven's Gate people believed. Oh, and math.
There are numbers everywhere. You know, on phones, on houses, on microwaves.
Numbers are great, but they should also learn colors, smells, vibrations.
Math should just be left out of the equation. Not the equation like in a math sense, just like, you know, equation, right? So, because I don't like believe in math.
Not to women.
I guess if other people want to learn math, they should be able to.
But then they'll be the type of people who know math.
All right. And so those are all prospective Hillary Clinton voters. Good for her. The next generation behind the millennials, you get an idea of who's coming. Oh, and right behind them are these teenagers. Here's just one example of one.
Did you know that there are over 5 languages in this world?
We don't need all these languages, people. We don't need no British language or Canadian language or Hawaiian language or Alaskan language. We need just American, okay? Just American language. Nothing more, nothing less, just American. You want to know why? Because the letters are pretty. They're cute, pretty letters. Like you can't get letters, like, prettier in the world, okay? Also, like, with the, what is it, sans serif, and, there's just a lot of fonts. You can't get that with no Canadian language with the little ching-chang-chongs.
Okay, no, well, good. Yeah. That's a 16-year-old giving the view of, I guess, a lot of 16-year-olds about the world we live in. And now you know why we have a Democrat and Republican Party. We're going to take a break and come back and take this issue on. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. Just a moment, we're going to get to a solution that everyone who really is conscious and concerned about the world we live in can make a difference, including if you're working one or two jobs, if you have children. It doesn't matter how busy you are, you can participate in this. And I recently had a conversation with Ralph Nader and Chris Hedges. I had a conversation with Jesse Ventura and a lot of other thought leaders about we should all be working, we progressives should be working together to start to build some real strong coalition for what we know we could educate the public about, at least those who are interested in change, and then start implementing this change. More on that coming up. One more. If you think that the average information that people share on the internet is relevant and they're going to help with the change, here's just one more to contemplate.
Hey, everyone. So I was chatting on AIM with this guy. Supposedly he was from England, and I speak fluent American, so there's a bit of a language barrier, but he knew really good English. Ow, stop biting my toe. So I was talking to him about, like, this game I wanted, because I was hoping he'd buy it for me. And it was The Sims 3 Generations, and I really wanted that expansion pack for my Sims game. And he said supposedly he wanted it too. And I'm like, well, why don't you get it? And he's like, because it's too much. I'm like, well, how much is it? He's like, it's £15. So apparently there's a bit of a language barrier there, because I asked him how much it costs, not how much it weighs. So, bit of a language barrier, we went over that jump, but the thing I'm wondering is, why does it weigh so much? That's what's confusing to me. Like, does it have to do with where England is located? Like, is it because it's, like, I don't even know. Because, like, maybe it's, like, really close to Jupiter? So, like, if you know the solar system, America is, like, in the middle, and, England is, like, it's the closest to the sun, I think.
Well, so there's Donald Trump's vice president. Now, As a 17-year-old, whoa. And when you travel as much as I do and you have a chance to meet people from around the world, you start to appreciate the different levels of discipline and their capacity for bringing in information and processing it to hone their critical thinking skills. Now I want you to listen to this. This is a gentleman who was an outstanding professional athlete in college, and he had a chance to continue his career as an athlete and a coach at one of the most respected Catholic colleges in the United, universities in the United States. And he had a question about who was sponsoring the athletic team, and he had to wear, you know, certain logos and of that sponsor. And he got really concerned about it, and he wanted to find out the truth. And they told him, you either wear this or you're gone. It didn't matter that he was an outstanding coach and that they were undefeated. It was that money was coming in, millions of dollars, to the university. And so he decided to find out what it was like to live as a Nike worker. So what you're not seeing is him traveling over to where these were being made in Southeast Asia, and actually living on the same amount they live on, $1.30 or $1.50 a day. And what he had to go through, and in the documentary, what you don't see is that he had a little tiny room, and right outside the room is all the raw sewage, and how sick everybody was, and how he got sick, and this other person that was going with him got sick, and how he didn't see how people could survive on $1.30, $1.50 a day, and yet they do by the hundreds of thousands, but they suffer from diseases. And then he took that information to the founder and CEO of Nike, met him in a restaurant, and wanted to share this, and the guy just rebuffed him immediately and says, no, I don't want to know this. So listen up, because our end stage message is all of us can do one thing that can make a difference. We can all say no to Nike. And by saying no to Nike, we're then speaking on behalf, not just of ourselves, but of all those people being exploited, because Nike just wants to make more profit. Could Nike still give these people a living wage and still make a profit? Absolutely yes, but they've chosen not to. Here's what you need to hear.
At like the age of 18, I was just on the track. Go to a good college, get a decent degree, do good. You're going to get an entry-level job down on Wall Street. You're going to work real hard. You're going to be a broker. You're going to make tons of money. You're going to be retired by, you know, a very young age. You're going to have a house on the beach in New Jersey and a couple Mercedes and a trophy wife, and that'll be the end of the game. I'm done. Multimillionaire. That's it. I was playing professionally for the New Jersey Imperials. I was playing the best soccer of my life. I get offered this coaching job by one of my teammates to go coach at St. John's University, the NCAA Division I national champions. They're the best team in the country. I was having a blast. I was loving coaching. I was loving playing. I'm living in New York. I'm also studying stuff that I really enjoy. I'm digging into, like, studying theology for the first time in my life in a formal way. I get online, I start doing searches about Nike and sweatshops and labor practices. And what I found was, if you wanted to pick a company that completely violates everything that Catholic social teaching is about, Nike would be your perfect case study. And at the same time I'm doing this research, St. John's University Athletic Department starts to negotiate a $3.5 million endorsement deal with Nike that would require me as a coach to wear and promote the products. St. John's University got the largest Catholic institution in the country, coupling itself with the largest sportswear company in the world. And I said, how can we, as such a public symbol of Catholicism, do something that runs completely counter to our mission? Like, we're saying to the world then, look, you should care about the poor, and we should fight against injustice, and we should seek out the causes of poverty. Well, unless you're getting, like, some really good athletic equipment and $3.5 million along with it. I mean, you want to talk about just
hypocrisy manifested in the real world. Like, this was it.
And you have the story at St. John's.
Jim Keady has caused a massive pileup.
He is clearly an idealist.
I didn't go to St. John's University to work for Nike. I went there to coach and to study theology.
Keady, a devout Catholic, protested.
How does he reach the point where he thinks it's immoral to wear the swoosh?
Because he's coming at it from a background of faith and religion. This isn't about just money or power or job or anything. Think about this. How many of us on a job that we really want are prepared to get a memo from the boss saying, stop doing this or you're out, and you keep doing it?
I was given an ultimatum by my head coach, wear Nike and drop this issue or resign. End of story. So in June of 1998, I was constructively fired.
People were telling me, you don't know what you're talking about. You know, those are great jobs, and you can live like a king or queen on those wages, and those people are really happy to have those jobs. I want to go find out. Doesn't everybody just want to know the truth? So I wanted to know the truth firsthand. I wanted to see it. I wanted to smell it. I wanted to hold it in my hand. I knew I was going to need other people. Leslie was a natural match.
Jim and I went to college together. We came together ultimately because we share an interest in labor rights issues.
I eventually met back up with her a few years after school through an email about sweatshops.
I really wanted to be working with these issues.
And I wrote to my buddy and said, you know, who's this woman that's writing to you about this stuff? And he said, oh, she's nuts like you. You know, you should email her. And she was actually en route to go work with Mother Teresa's sisters in India. And I sent her off this email. Hey, I got this great idea. Let's go starve on Nike's wages in Indonesia.
And so he's like, I really need to go.
And she wrote me back. Sounds great.
Let's go.
We plopped down in Tangerang, Indonesia, this industrial suburb outside of the capital of Jakarta, with the plans that for the next month, we were going to live as Nike's factory workers lived, which meant that we were going to go live in a worker's slum outside of the capital, and we were going to live on the workers' wages, $1.25 a day for the next month, to try and come maybe to a better understanding of what it's like for Nike factory workers to make this kind of money and live under these conditions. We lived in a 9x9 cement box. It was over 100 degrees, it's 100% humidity, a small window, certainly no air conditioning.
No furniture. You slept on a very thin mat on an uneven cement floor covered in shelf paper.
The streets outside of your home are lined by open sewers. And what that means, like in the rainy season, you would have all that feces just float up into the streets and into your house.
And every time that you go to the bathroom, it comes back out into the sewer for everybody else to see and smell.
You would have football-sized rats that would stampede over the ceiling at night and come up through the toilet and look for stuff to eat in the house, or the fist-sized cockroaches that would crawl over you at night. Just like anyone around the world, you can't just drop into someone's life and be like, hi, we're here, we want to live in your life and tell us how much it sucks. You had to build bonds of trust.
Jim? Siri? Yeni? Nice to meet you. Hello.
They treated us very politely, and it wasn't until they saw that we were committed in the capacity of living on the wages that they're forced to live on, in the conditions that they are living in, that they felt that they could start to begin to trust us. You get to know them, and you hold their children, and you eat with them, and you share stories with them. They become part of your family.
We would go to, you know, different workers' homes. You got like four women sleeping in like an 8x8 cement box, like, and all their possessions are in there. Like everything in this small area.
The workers would have to share a bathroom with 5 to 10 other families. The workers would have to share a living quarters, actually, like a row of shacks with corrugated tin roofs. All those families would share a laundry corner and a kitchen facility. and they would all share the same well to take the water out of.
$1.25 a day after you've paid for your rent, water, electricity, any major transportation costs, you're going to be left on average with roughly 7,000 rupiah per day. What the hell does that mean? That's going to buy you two simple meals of rice and vegetables, a bag of peanuts, a bottle of iced tea, and some dish detergent. And that's all you can get. And that's your reward?
Without a doubt. We found it out in the first week that we were there. There's no way that you can live on $1.25 a day and maintain your human dignity. It's just not possible.
I lost 25 pounds living on Nike's wages in Indonesia. I spent the month painfully hungry and tired and like near the point of exhaustion most days.
I just felt my energy storage was just depleted, and I just started going downhill fast, and I just started getting sick every day.
And she got very sick one day. She had like a fever of like 104, and she's got to deal with, well, I have a fever 104. I can buy aspirin and like a little drink box to get some vitamin C, but if I buy those two things, I don't eat for the rest of the day.
That's part of a documentary on the subject of Nike and sweat labor, slave labor. So what can we do? What's the positive side of this story? Let us not wait until we have a grandmaster outline of how we can take back our country. That might take 10 to 15 years of diligent work to do so. But individually, we can do some things immediately. And one thing we can all do, we can boycott Nike simply by no longer buying their shoes or clothes. Now, all of us, myself included, have bought, because I'm a runner, didn't know all this existed. But once you know something is happening, then you have a responsibility not to support it. So buy only those items for working out, athletics, that you know come from union labor or fair labor, and not where people are exploited. And could Nike be more humane? Sure they could. But in the ruthless world of profits over people, people are always going to lose. That's just one example of one type of corporation exploiting one group of people. But it happens in China. It happens in India with children making bricks and weaving rugs. And it happens until we decide no longer to purchase what they are exploiting, their own population, to gain a profit from. So we don't need a Nike outfit or shoes. So say no to Nike, everything Nike, as of today. And so, Desiree and John, that's where our journey begins. Go up and educate yourself now. You can download this film off ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and then read everything you can about exploitation of labor. That's where the journey begins. And in time, we will add more and more things to become aware of, more and more things to stop purchasing until the day a year from now or a year and a half from now. You're no longer shopping in box stores, eating from McDonald's or any of these other companies, drinking their colas, eating their sugar, buying clothes that was exploitatively made. You will have made a step that makes an enormous difference. You may not think so because you're one person. But what if 10 million people stop buying Nike? Then you make a big difference. So let's join together, and we have a big, big audience listening to this show, this number one listen progressive radio show in the world. So let's all stop Nike today. That's our journey. That's where we begin, and we're adding a whole lot more to it. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.